حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين أما بعد فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والعصر إن الإنسان لفي خسر إلا الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات وتواصوا بالحق وتواصوا بالصبر صلوات
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
We are speaking about the effects of Iman. And what are the effects of the aqidah, the faith that we have in Usul al-Din? When we say or when we accept, believe in the fact that Allah is one, then having Iman in that, what is the effect of it? When we say Adl, that Allah is Adil, what is the effect of that? And so on. So here we see that we had mentioned that whenever anyone has Iman in Tawheed, then the effect of that is he becomes Muttaqi. And he fears Allah. When an individual believes in the fact that Allah is Adil, that Allah is just, then the effect that happens in him and in his life, the result of that is that his mind and heart will be at peace. His mind is at peace when he believes that Allah is Adil. Because he knows that whatever Allah does, he does for good. And whatever emanates from Allah is good. And hence, whatever is the end result of our action will always be good because of the fact that Allah is Adil. That's why he does not have anxiety, anger. He's not upset because he believes Allah is Adil. When you don't believe Allah is Adil, then you see that you get upset, angry, and you have anxiety. This is the reason why you get upset. Because an individual who does not believe Allah is Adil, then everything that happens to him is oppression. And there is no answer for that oppression. He says, my life is hell. My life is hell. And there is no fixing this issue. The other guy, he's living it up. He has everything. I don't have anything. And hence, my life is hell. And that's how I'm going to die. But the fact is that when you believe that Allah is Adil, then you know that if he has not given you something in this dunya, if he has made you go without something in this dunya, then he has done for a good reason. He has. If Allah, he has, for example, he did not give us the wealth that we wanted. Maybe it's because that's how it's... Not having that wealth is going to help us. Why? Because we believe that Allah is Adil. He does not do any injustice to anyone. So if he does not do injustice, if he does not do zulm, so he has not done zulm to me. But when we believe that Allah is not adil, then we have the idea that Allah can also do zulm to us. That's when we believe that Allah can do zulm to us. And this is the reason that the major effect, the main result of having iman in the adl of Allah is the fact that your heart and mind is at rest. It's at peace. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
So now we, as we go into the next stage, which obviously is the third item in Usul al-Din, and that is Abuwat. And we have Aqidah, ideology, we have faith and belief in the fact that Allah sent messengers to us, and we must believe in this link that is between us and Allah. And what are its effects in our lives? What does that entail? So now we see, here we must understand what is Abuwat. They are, you see, of the people, representatives that Allah sent. There's one group that is called Anbiya, and or in Nabi, for example, Nabi. Who is a Nabi? This is an individual who receives revelation from Allah and implements it in his life. Invites the people towards that revelation. Then you have Mursaleen, or in other words, Rasul. These are people who brought a message from Allah, and their job is to give that message to others. And then you have Ulul Adham. These are the ones that Allah, He gave a law to and said that they are going to bring down the law. So now we see the three, and we see that all the representatives who came from Allah, they all are Anbiya. All of them are known as Anbiya. Meaning, when we say Anbiya, there are 124,000 of them. They came everywhere, to every people. These are Anbiya. And what's the job of them? Their job is to receive news from Allah. Their job is to receive news from Allah and to give the news to the people. And out of them, there are a certain amount of people who are called Rasul. And their job is to receive the message from Allah and to give that message to the people. And then out of these, there are a handful of individuals known as Ulul Adham. And Ulul Azam are those people that Allah gave them a law in order to give this law and establish the law amongst the people. So this is something that we have heard a lot of times. And I'm just repeating this so I can go on explaining to you the other things that are related to this, if you send me a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
So these three groups, you should understand who they are and what they do. Meaning, a Nabi is an individual who has the ability to receive wahi. He has the ability to receive wahi. If Allah wanted to give this message to us, He couldn't come to us. We can't go there. Now if you say, why can't he come here? Then we already had this discussion in Tawheed. Because for him to come into our realm, only those people can exist in this realm who are defective, who essentially are weak, who are weak and are dependent on time and space. So if Allah was dependent, if Allah was weak, then He could come here. But if He came here, He wouldn't be Allah. So that is one thing that we don't want to go into. But just to remind you of that, maybe this issue might come. Why can't He come here? But the thing is that He can't come here. And we can't go there also. We can't go there also, where He is. And now, the only other way was that if He gives the message to us, if He gives His revelation to us, instead of handing it to someone else and we have to listen to someone else, that could also be done. But the fact is that this revelation, Allah can only give to people whose hearts are pure and whose nafs is pure. And since our nafs is not pure, since our intellect is not good, that's why revelation did not come to us. So Allah chose those amongst us. Allah chose those amongst us whose nafs and their heart is pure and their intellect is perfect. So that when that revelation, when that individual is like that, he is capable of receiving that revelation. So He gave that revelation to them, and those are known as Anbiya. Those are known as Anbiya. So now, the job of the Anbiya is to invite the people. But you see, they do not invite the people with their tongues. Their job is to implement what Allah has sent in their own lives, so that they themselves can be the inviters to Allah through their own character.
Yes.
They manifest Allah's deen in themselves. That is their job. Though this is who you call a Nabi. When it says that an individual is able to receive wahi and revelation, it means he is able to show Allah's revelation through his own life. That is the person who is a Nabi. So this is a Nabi. Then the next stage comes when he becomes a Rasul. And Rasul are those people that Allah gave them that message. Their job is to give the message to the people. So now, no Rasul ever existed without being a Nabi. Because if you can't implement the law in your own self, how can you give it to others? If you can't show Islam and that message Allah sent in your own life, then how can you invite others towards that message? So first you must become a Nabi who's able to show that revelation in your own life. Then you become a Rasul who gives this revelation to the people, who announces it to the people. And then after that, you see, out of those people, there Allah says the next stage is you become Ulul Azam. Ulul Azam are those people that He gave a law to. That's why you see Ulul Azam are less. Mursaleen are more. Because the rule is that the one who has the law and the message is always less, and those who give out the message and announce the message are always more. You see, one who has the message, those who have the message are always less. Those who announce the message and give that message to others, they're always more. It's very easy to understand that. For example, Islam is the message. And Islam has all these people who are trying to propagate it. People who are intelligent, people who are dumb, people who are good, people who are bad, people who have iman, people who have hypocrites, they're all trying to propagate it. And you see this. How many types of people you see on the minbar? You see that. How many people are doing it? Why? And you see, Islam is only one. There's only one message. But how many people are trying to give this out? How many are these people who are spreading the message? So now this is the reason why we see those people who have the message, they're always less. And those who announce it to the people are always more. This is the reason we see Ulul Azam are less because they have the message from Allah. Mursaleen are more because they give the message to the people that the Ulul Azam have. You see this? And I'm going through these details so that we can go on with this discussion. Now you see, when you are here at this point, now you see, those people, when we see that all these other people, they spread Islam. When we see that these people, they spread Islam. These people are many types. But those people who are going to spread Islam and who take the responsibility to spread Islam, these are called muballigh. These are called muballigh. Meaning, what do? They take the responsibility to spread Islam. You see? And those are different than Mursaleen. Why? Because a muballigh takes the responsibility to spread Islam, but a Rasul is given the responsibility to spread Islam. That's why there's a difference. You can have many muballigh. You have many muballigh. Some who are good, some who are bad, all kinds of people are muballigh. But you see that when you have a Rasul, someone who is handed the responsibility to spread Islam, that person, he cannot make any mistakes. For whatever he says, Allah is responsible for it. And let me explain that. If you send me a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Now, for example, I give a speech over here. I'm doing this every day. I give a speech. You are here attending the speech. Now, after the speech, for example, let's say you like something in the speech and you want to go and tell a friend. You know, Sheikh, you know what he said in the speech? He said so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so. Now, whatever he said was not what I said. Because he himself never understood what I was saying. But he gave him the understanding that he understood. So the other person, he came to me and said, Sheikh, did you say such and such a thing? I say, no. But that person was saying it. See, understand this. That person, he said you said this. I say, I'm not responsible for what he says. I'm not responsible for what he says. There are many people here, I'm not responsible for what they think and what they understand and what they say. Right? So here, I answered back and he's happy with it. Why? Because really, that person took the responsibility to tell him. See this? That person took the responsibility to tell the other brother what I said. So now I am not responsible for what he says. But now, for example, if I tell that brother, listen, if you're not here one day, you know what? Ask this brother. If you want to know about this speech, ask this brother. So now, if this brother, he comes and tells you something, and you come back to me and say, so Maulana, did you say this? I say, no. But that brother told me. Now, here, do I have the right to tell you, well, I'm not responsible for what he says?
No.
See that? No. I'm not responsible for what he said. So now, why? Why am I not responsible? Because I'm the one who showed him to you. I'm the one who referred him to you. I'm the one who said, listen to what he says. So if he is saying wrong, then it's my responsibility that I showed you someone who doesn't understand what I'm saying. You see this? This is the reason. No matter if all the muballigheen of Islam are wrong and they are all corrupt, it doesn't matter. It doesn't harm Islam. But if one prophet of Allah is wrong, it will destroy the whole of Islam. And this is the reason, my brothers, we need to understand. When we talk about the Anbiya, why is it that those Anbiya must be masoom? It is because Allah said, listen to them. So Allah must take the responsibility for what they say.
Yes.
He must take the responsibility for what they do. Otherwise, if He doesn't take the responsibility, we have a right to tell Allah, well, you are the one who said this. Right? You are the one who said that you have to go behind them. Right? If they led us wrong, so why are you holding our neck? We have that. That's the reason. Those people who take the responsibility and say, you know what, I want to do Islamic work, so let me get on the member and preach. Let me get on the member and preach. I can say whatever I want. Whatever garbage I spew out is different. It is not hurting Islam. It's not harming Islam. Yes, I might hurt some people's faith over here. Right? I might misguide some people over here, but deen is not hurt by that. Deen is deen. Because the deen is not depending on what I say. Deen is not depending on what I do. Because the deen has never said that this alim here, he's from Usul-ad-Deen. If the deen had said this is from Usul-ad-Deen, then yes, deen is responsible for it. But once the deen and religion had said this is from Usul-ad-Deen, these are the fundamental people that you must follow, then it means that those who are the Usul-ad-Deen, they must say that which Allah wants them to say. They must do that which Allah wants them to say. This is the reason that we see Allah when He announced any Nabi, and when our Nabi came, He said about Him so that we can understand, مَا يَنْتَقُ عَنِ الْهَوَىٰ إِنْ هُوَا إِلَّا وَحْيٌ يُوحَىٰ. This Nabi does not speak of his own desire. He speaks only with revelation that has been revealed to him.
Yes.
Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
So now understand why Anbiya are masoom. Now you see all the Anbiya, all the Rasul and the Ulul Azm. And I explained this to you just now. Now you see the difference between our Prophet and the rest of them. You see, there's one exclusive attribute that our Prophet has that no other Anbiya has. Out of all the Anbiya who came, our Prophet is the last one. Out of all the Mursaleen that came, our Rasul is the last Rasul. And out of all the Ulul Azam who had the law from Allah, who received the law from Allah, who came, our Prophet is the last Ulul Azam.
Yes.
This is why in Islamic terms he is called Khatamul Anbiya. Khatamul Nabiyyin. He is the seal, the ending. That's it. That's the final. So he is the last Nabi. He is the last Rasul. He is the last Ulul Azam. And I am repeating this for a reason. So that you understand the point that I want to make here. And it could be clear to everyone here. That you see, he is the last Nabi, last Rasul, last Ulul Azam. What does that mean? That means that after him there is no Nabi that is coming. After him, there is no one capable of receiving wahi from Allah.
Ya Allah.
Understand this. After him, there is no one who is able to give the message that Allah has given him. After him, there is no one who is going to bring another law. Meaning, his word is the final. His message is the final. His law is the final. And now I explain all of this for this just one point. That everyone who came before him, the difference between them and this Rasul is that in their time, there was a possibility of someone else coming later. there is a possibility that another Nabi is coming, another Rasul is coming. But in the case of this Nabi, there is no one coming after him. What that means is that in the earlier times, when there is a possibility of another Nabi coming, if that means that if any Nabi, whatever he said, there is a misunderstanding. There is a misunderstanding of what he said or what he done. That misunderstanding can be corrected with the next Nabi who's coming.
Yes.
If there's a misunderstanding of what he said, then the next Nabi who's coming, he can say, no, this is what he meant. For example, if Musa, in his time, those people with him, if they didn't understand him, and they didn't. When they didn't understand him, there is a possibility that another Nabi is coming. And that Nabi is going to say that, no, what Musa said is this, not what you are saying. See, understand this. So now what happens, there is a chance to rectify that problem that is created. Even, my brothers, even if a Nabi makes a mistake, even if he makes a mistake, the next Nabi that is coming, he can rectify it. Understand this. He can fix that problem. He is able to mend that problem. But now you see, this is the difference between them and our Prophet. That after him, no one else is coming. So now all the Anbiya are masoom. But the ismat of our Rasul must be such that not even any misunderstanding can also take place.
Yes, yes.
Not even any mistake can take place. Not even any wrong idea can take place. This is the reason that when our Rasul came and said there's no Nabi after me, there's no Prophet after me, then his ismat is such that no other Nabi had the ismat that our Rasulullah had.
Yes.
See, no other Anbiya had the ismat that he had. And this is the reason why other Anbiya, all the other Anbiya and our Prophet is different. Because in their lives, there is a logical possibility that a mistake could be made. But in the life of our Prophet, there can be no possibility of any mistake occurring.
Yes.
Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala
Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
And we see this, my brother, we see this, right? Throughout the history, and we see the examples of the Anbiya, they have made mistakes. It's not haram that they did. We know they cannot do haram. They haven't done a sin also. What they did is termed as arke awla. This is something that the Anbiya have committed. Arke awla means, out of the many things that are good, you choose something that is good, right? But you leave what is best. You leave what is best. We see that the Anbiya have done this and that mistake was made. That is in their time. But we see that the ismat of our Rasul is that he cannot even do tarke awla. He cannot even do that because there is no one else coming after him to say that, no, this is right. And this is wrong. There is no one coming after that. So he cannot even do that. Now for you to understand what is this tarke awla, because a lot of people, they have a hard time to understand this concept. What is tarke awla? You know, because when we are used to arke wajib, so how can we understand what is tarke awla? I mean, when we leave the wajib things, for us to understand what is awla, it is out of our imagination. So a lot of times people ask me, what is tarke awla? I mean, what is it tarke awla they did? You know, they think it's some sort of a sin, you know. Well, it's a minor sin, but it's a sin. No, let me explain this to you. What is tarke awla? And this is something that we must understand. And here, you see, in our lives, there is one place where no one does tarkiyawala. Not adults, not men, not women, not children, no one. No one does tarkiyawala. There's one place. And if you don't know where that place is, let me tell you. That place is the dining table. That's a place that no one does tarkiyawala. Because when you have, for example, a dining table, you go there and you see that there are 50 dishes there. 50 dishes. Now you see that they, for example, we are not able to eat all the 50 dishes, obviously. And if you do, then we have to look at you. But you see that there are all these 50 dishes there. Now what happens? Amongst the 50 dishes, and all of them have made for your liking, what you like, and the way you want it. So all of them are good. Now what happens? I say, I can't eat all the 50. So I choose, for example, I choose the 10 best dishes. I choose the 10 best dishes that I love and like the most. You know, and each of those dishes is going to make my mouth water. Now, when you have divided these 50 into 10 and 40, 10 that are the best dishes that you like and you love, and the other 40 that are also good, now when there is a choice that you need to make, from which of these two groups are you going to eat? Which group are you going to eat from? Which group are you going to get your hand from? Where is your hand going to go first? Those 10 things that you like the most. Mm-hmm. Right? Those 10 things you like the most. So now you understand. Those other 40 are also good. But these 10 are the best. So here we understood, what does it mean? Now if we leave those 10 and go for the 40, this is called tarkiyawala. This is called tarkiyawala, that we left the best and we went to the good. So now we see, everyone understands this, whether he's a man or a woman, adult or a child. If you leave rice and, I don't know, vegetable curry and chicken curry, and right next to it you put down pizza. Now you tell me which one of the kids is going to go for the rice and curry. They all, but if they do, the others will say, are you crazy? Why are you taking the rice for? There's pizza. Why are they saying there's pizza? Because they understood that this is awla. They understood this is awla. And if you leave it, it means you are leaving the awla, the best thing. So you see, this is called tarkiyawala. Everyone understands tarkiyawala. And just like we understand this idea when it comes to our food, if we can only understand it when it comes to our religion, then we would know that Allah has given you so many choices. There is the best choice. There is the good choice. Those who leave the best for the good, those are the people who are making this mistake of doing tarkiyawala. The others are not haram. They are good. But we see that those people who leave that, they are doing tarkiyawala. If we understand this, if we understand it when it comes to food, it shows that we are servants of food. And if we have the ability to understand it in religion, then it will show that we are the servants of Allah.
Ya Allah.
Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala alihi.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Then it will show that whose servant are we. Because if we are Allah's servant, then whatever Allah regards as best, we will do that. But sometimes, when we do the other thing, there are many examples we can go through, but now I want to come back, right, to this subject of Rasulullah. We see that our Rasul, our Prophet, was that Nabi who, where even the chance for tarke aulaad, it cannot exist in his life. Because that is what is meant by Khatamun Nabiyyin. Khatamun Nabiyyin means that this Prophet, others might, there might be a chance of the fact that there might not be masoom. You can give that logical reasoning. Even though we know they're masoom, Allah appointed them. But if there is a chance for them, but there is no chance that this Nabi, he cannot be masoom. This is the reason, my brother. He cannot even leave that which is the best. He cannot leave that which is the best. And let me ask you this now. When we see the life of the Prophet and these issues are raised about his life, now you see, if I give you the two options, what is more important? Is giving the message of Allah more important? Is giving the message of Allah more important? Or is helping a child who's falling down more important? You see, this job that Rasulullah is doing, this is his job. He was sent for this. وَالَّذِي بَعَثَ فِي الْأُمِّيِّينَ رَسُولٌ مِّنْهُمْ He was sent for the purpose of giving the message of Allah. This was his reason for him being here. This is his job. You see this? This is his job. The message is his job. And if a child falls down, to pick him up is not his job. And that too, understand this way, that child is not in any harm. See, he's not in any harm. If he was a harm, if he was being harmed, it's different. If his life was in danger, it's different. If his health was in danger, it's different. But he was running towards him and he fell down. Rasulullah was on the minbar. And that child was running towards him. He fell down. The job of Rasulullah is to give the message of Islam to the people. The child fell down. So now, what is more important? If he left the message and went to help the child, then in the eyes of people, this is awla. That was not. So what did he do here? Tarke awla. Tarke awla. And this is the reason that when he went, left the minbar, stopped his speech, left the member, left the message, went to help the child, picked him up, and said, this stoppage was for Hussein.
Ya Allah.
Ya Ali.
This
Allah Akbar. Allah Akbar. Allah Akbar.
Ali. Hazari.
Ya Ali.
He said that this stoppage is for whom? This is for Hussein. And he said this, why? Because people might think he's leaving the message to help his grandson. But he wanted to make sure they understand he is not helping his grandson. But he's letting everyone know that for him, the speech he is giving is not as important as him trying to pick up Hussein from the ground. To pick up Hussein from the ground. Why? Because this speech he is giving will go from one ear of yours to the other ear of yours, as it has. As it has. But Hussein was picked up so that people can understand that if this message is going to survive, it will be because of Hussein.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Nare Hayri.
Ali.
You see that, my brothers? This is the reason. When he picked up Imam Hussein, he showed everyone why he is picking him up. So show that this is the person through whom my message will survive. That's why I am picking him up, not because he's my grandson, because the survival of my mission is depending on him. This is the reason, my brothers, we see that when we look at his action, Rasulullah cannot even do tarke aula. And he understood that that is awla than the speech that he is giving. It is not that my son is falling down so I have to go and get down. No. This was his job. That wasn't his job. Allah said that this is the reason he sent you there. But no, he had him there. And we see more examples of that. One more example and inshallah more I'll explain tomorrow. About Nabuwwah. Now we see another example, so you understand this. That when we looked at this, that when we look at his life, and we see another example where you can say, Tarke Ola, where? And the issue was, is it more rightful to hold your child in your hand or on your neck? Is it Ola? What is the best way? Is it Ola to have your child in your arm as you walk? Or have him on your neck as you walk? What is the best way to do this? In any way, because he has to be the example for us. Here we see that when you ask the people, they say it is more rightful that you hold him in your hand, in your lap when you walk with him, not on your neck, and become a right for him. When you go for Eid prayer, and when you walk out with your son, do you have him holding your hand or in your lap, or do you have him on your neck as a right for him? Understand this. People will say, this is Tarke Ola. People will say, this is Tarke Ola. But now we see that this Rasul, because he is Khatamun Nabiyyin, cannot do Tarke Ola. And he is showing everyone, this is not because of the fact that he is my grandson, that I'm going to put him on my neck and become a horse for him. I am doing this so that everyone understands that the position of where Hussein is on my neck. Because his burden of that thing which Hussein is going to do, that thing which Hussein is going to do for my deen, for the religion I brought, is going to put a burden on me forever. See this. This is what Hussein is going to do. That's why he had Hussein on his neck and he ran with him and he became his horse, so that people understand that Hussein was that person who is going to, that he is that person that Rasulullah is giving a right today, to make people understand that day will also come when Hussein is going to give that back to the religion of Allah and Rasulullah. So now we see Hussein. We see that if you look at the ismat of Rasulullah, his ismat is the highest stage of ismat and infallibility. He has the highest stage of infallibility above all the Anbiya. And this is the reason not even any sort of Tarke Ola can exist in his life. Inshallah, I'll go on more about this, inshallah, tomorrow, and we'll see the effects of Nabuwat in our life. I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us the tawfiq and the blessing to be on the right path. To give us the wisdom to understand his guidance. To hasten the reappearance of our Imam. To make us his helper when he comes. وآخر الدعوانا الحمد لله رب العالمين. اللهم صل على محمد.